The scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for May 21st, 2017. I'm Nima Nadiri alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the Italian Open from Rome and look ahead to the French Open, which starts on next Sunday. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for the upcoming French Open as well as Wimbledon Championships. Let's introduce our co-host for this week. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing very well. Wrapped up another Masters 1000 as well as Premier Tournament on the WTA this week in Rome, as you know. We had Alex Zverev winning his maiden 1000 Masters 1000 title over Novak Djokovic in impressive fashion, as well as Elena Svitolina defeating Simona Halep for the women's title. So that's, you know, great for her. And we're going to look back at those matches as well as the event and then look forward to RG, which is, you know, knocking on our doorsteps. So, Parsa, let's jump right into the men's draw. We had Alex Zverev. I mean, how impressive was this victory? I mean, people are going to say, yeah, Djokovic was off, this and that. But regardless of all of that, Parsa, right? You know, we have a 20-year-old kid. You know, he looks 20. You know what I'm saying? Like, he looks very green and thin and, you know what I mean, lanky and all that stuff. Comes in. He's going to be a top 10 player as of tomorrow. Just turned 20 years old. He beats Djokovic 6-4, 6-3. Doesn't blink. Breaks him right off the bat in the first game of the match. Then early in the second. And that, to me, is always the mark of a great player. Sampras was in that mold where he was just looking for that one break. He's not looking to beat you 6-2, 6-2. He's looking to beat you, you know, 6-3, 6-4, and then you're out of here, right? And he just showing nerves of steel, great metal, and just, you know, cruising through that match. And, I mean, it was an impressive. What a backhand this guy has. I mean, and his serve is just, it looks like he can hit it always at about a buck 30 and never really miss it, right? Like, he's still holding such a high percentage with such a potent delivery, you know what I'm saying? And his second serve is very good. I mean, and his forehand is right there, and he's hitting off the rise and got great reach. I mean, the sky's the limit for this guy. So what was your overall, you know, assessment of this match and how you saw Zverev break that down? And then we'll get a little bit into Djokovic as well.
Yeah, and just to add to it, that now he's gaining experience too with, yes, those big-time blown opportunities he had in the past couple of years where he didn't mentally believe. Now he gets on the court with the top champions and he's not scared or intimidated anymore, as he's been in this situation a couple of times. So
yes,
things are coming together very nicely for Zverev. You know, plus I think his brother pushing him in the rankings a little bit, and as much as everyone said that it helps Misha, at the same time I think it's helping Alex too. It's, you know, they're both coming up. Though Misha's much older, there is some sort of brotherly competition going on, and probably a little bit of rooting for each other as well. So that always helps to have someone on your side in a sport as lonely as tennis is. So all good from the Zverev camp. I thought the match itself was a little bit low quality.
For sure.
You know, I thought that, to be honest with you, I mean, I thought Djokovic played, you know, really locked in tennis yesterday. Just hitting the ball everywhere, and
yeah,
just everything was good. And then today, you know, he got down those early breaks, and but the way they were getting, he was getting broken, were first ball errors. It was just very, very strange. Not to take anything away from Zverev, because when the pressure was on him, he came up with big serves and played great tennis and did what he had to do in order to hold up the trophy. So I think overall, tournament-wise, a little bit scratchy for me. It wasn't the greatest week of tennis, not the most compelling stuff. But you know, interesting that we got a new guy in there finally that we can now talk about at least being a favorite for slams in the future. I mean, who's the young guy that's got the best chance of winning it? It's Zverev, and then maybe Kyrgios behind him now, and so maybe he's going to be our next wave of young players. We'll have to see. But in terms of Djokovic, I thought it was a pretty good tournament for him. I think he established himself well. He got a couple things going. He was positive and pumping his fist again, although it looked fake.
Yes. I agree with that. Yeah.
You know, he was doing it though. You know, and yes, that's good. And he was attempting to do something different, and so that's good. And he's scratching and clawing to try to find his game again. So these for me are all hidden great signs for Djokovic fans that he's on the mission of, okay, I know this track that I've been on hasn't been working for me. Let's try it a different way. That's always a very positive sign. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of time until all of it comes back together for him. I really, 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 really believe that.
Yeah, and Porcelain, you know, change is always good. You know, that can also go both ways. But I think in this instance, you know, he got rid of his longtime complete coaching staff. You know, his brother and his wife were there with him this week, supporting him to the finals, which was fantastic for him to have in his corner. It was announced today that Andre Agassi, 8-time former Grand Slam champion, winner of basically everything, including an Olympic gold medal, will take over as his coach. The terms are still not, you know, yet to be determined if it's going to be only for the Slams, kind of like what Lendl has done with Murray, or is it going to be like on more of a week-to-week?
So we'll see. How amazing is that, Nima?
It's amazing. I mean,
I want Agassi in my court, even if I'm not on the tennis court.
Yeah, he's just such an eloquent, you know, thoughtful champion. I mean, when you hear him speak, I just drop everything. Like whenever he does those guest appearances for commentating or whatever on ESPN or whatever it is, you know, you just got to put down anything you're doing and just listen to what he's saying, because I mean, you always are going to learn something. And a guy like Djokovic, who's such a sponge in that respect, I think can only bode well for him. Now, as we both know, you know, just because you're a good player doesn't mean you're going to become a good coach. So it remains to be seen if Agassi is going to have that effect on him. But this cannot be a negative for Djokovic, in my opinion. I mean, you're looking at two of the top two or three, along with Connor's best returners of all time. Just mentality, you know, game production, you know, Agassi is going to come in there and say exactly what he thinks, you know, Djokovic has lost in this last year or so in terms of his, you know, vulnerability and all that stuff that has caused him not to be as good. But even if you look at today's stats parts, I just want to bring this back for a second. You look at Zverev, 7 aces to only 1 for Djokovic. Zverev had 71% of his first serve percentage. Of that, he was winning 84% of his first serve points, 69% of his second serve points, and he didn't give Djokovic, who is unquestionably right now the best returner in tennis, even 1 break point. So regardless of everything, that to me is a tremendous effort from Zverev. And yeah, you can sit, everybody's going to say, you know, even Nadal said yesterday, wasn't my best day, you know, team beat him a couple days ago, I'm going to go back to Mallorca, do some fishing and get ready for Roland Garros. Nobody's going to sit there after, like, Djokovic is not going to sit there in the press conference. You know, I'll look it up shortly after we're done here. And he's going to say, today was my best match, and I still lost 6-4, 6-3 to a guy who's 20 years old, who's playing in his first ever Masters 1000 final, and I've played 50 of these. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's going to say they didn't play well, but to a certain degree, Zverev dealt with those conditions really well, because it was very blustery and windy. And he's got such, you know, really nice repeatable stroke patterns. That's something from a coaching perspective I've always looked at. He doesn't really break down technically. He's very, very sound overall. And, that, you know, Federer is in that same vein. And you look at a lot of guys like that, even like Djokovic, I would say, is not even in that same vein. You know, forehand can be scratchy at sometimes, serve can break down. But a guy like Zverev and a guy like Federer, even when they're not playing their best, it's not really a technical thing that's breaking down. It's, you know, more so could be fatigue, could be mental, it could be just motivation, whatever it is. But I think when you're looking at it as an overall, you know, Zverev's upside is tremendous, because I still don't think he's as talented as a guy like Nick Kyrgios. I mean, Kyrgios can just come on the court and blow you off the court and you don't even know what hit you. And a guy like Thiem is still physically stronger than Zverev. But when you look at it from a professional standpoint, I think that Zverev might be the best of the three coming up. That we can look at legitimate, you know, Grand Slam winners in the next 2 or 3 years with, you know, Kyrgios, Zverev, and team. You might need want to put Zverev right at the top of that. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, definitely interesting. I don't know if I still think team is going to be the first young guy to win. I think
because he's older too.
Years when Nadal is done.
Yeah,
I think team just blows through the French, and while there's Federer and Wawrinka and Djokovic and Murray vying for hardcore titles, I think team is going to be the dominant one on the dirt. But he needs Nadal out of there. So I'm not sure if that's going to happen. Definitely debatable and a great debate, right? You've got the wild card in Kyrgios. You know what you're going to get with team, who has to improve his fast court game. And Zverev seems to be the blend of both those guys. He's both explosive and patient and can serve. The one negative to him is, I would say, his movement is still, you know, and his ability to attack the net are still two things that really need some work. I still think the physicality of a best of five is still something that is uncharted territory for him.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to sort of see how he handles that in a seven match best of five set type scenario. I think is a very different ball game than a best of three match. So we have to see how all of these unfold. But I think team right now would probably, in a best of five scenario, I think is the one that is the strongest and the fittest.
Yes, yeah, no question about it. He's going to, I think, walk away from his career maybe 2 or 3 slams. I could see maybe 1 Australian Open, 2 Frenches, something like that, I think would be, you know, realistic for what he has to offer. Going down now the draw, we had, you know, Nadal losing his first match during the clay season. He drops to 19-1 as he, that's just in itself tremendous. He's, you know, back in Mallorca for a few days before he, you know, heads off to Paris early next week, in the next couple of days, to get ready for his potential 10th title there. So, Parson, when we look at this now, I don't think this loss really hindered Nadal's preparation at all. In retrospect, I think you might look at it, if he's holding that title in Paris in a few weeks' time, that was a blessing in disguise, really. Got some time to chill and relax and recharge and, you know, he feels good about his game and everything. And I mean, team just played full tilt for those two sets. He was hitting winner after winner, you know, backhands flat right down the line at 100 miles an hour. Just, and that's something that I had mentioned to you off air, that, you know, team's average ground stroke speed was 6 miles an hour faster than everybody else in the field during Rome this week at 82 miles an hour to 76. So, I mean, that's just tremendous in its own right. Paul Anacone was actually mentioning that he had some great things to say. And then one last thing on Nadal wanted to mention before we get into our top five picks now going into Roland Garros, and then we'll get into the women's side. When you look at Nadal's game, and Anacone had a great point, and we've talked about this now throughout the years, right? Nadal is going to be 31 in at the end of this month, right? Or at the beginning of, end of May, beginning of June. He's still kind of playing the way that he has always played, right? He's using his serve to set up the points and then grind away from there. So he'll go for like a 75%, you know, first serve percentage, and then go to grind. Now, Anacone had a fantastic point, and we haven't really talked about this layer of it as much, but you look at, sorry, let me just bring up this stat here. So we have, you know, that match that he lost against team, right? Nadal had 76% of his first serve percentages. So that's how many first serves he got in. Of that, he won only 55% of his first serve points and 53% of his second serve points. So Anacone made a great point in saying that, you know what, maybe instead of serving 76% first serve percentage, bring that down to 60%. But hit a couple more bombs, go for, you know, high 120s, low 130s, get some cheap points. Your second serve is still going to win over 50% anyways, which is fantastic for any tennis player, as we know, especially outdoors. And then that will just make everything a lot easier for him. But when he's going with a 76% first serve percentage, but only winning, you know, between 55 and 60% against the really top guys. I'm not talking about, you know, if he's playing in the first round against a guy ranked 90 or 110, right? I'm saying, like, once he gets into playing like a team or a Djokovic or, you know, somebody of that nature, or Zverev, who's very confident at this moment, is that going to be good enough in the latter stages of Roland Garros? Obviously, with you being somebody who's, you know, entwined in high performance 7 days a week, 24/7, what's your analysis on that? Because I'm really curious to hear what you have to say.
I hate to, you know, the first thing that came to mind was it's a little bit of a flawed data, to be honest with you.
Okay. Why do you say that?
Because, so he wins that percentage of second serve points because he delivers only second serves 24% of the points that he actually serves.
Yeah.
So if he goes down to 60%, in theory, that's now he's delivering 40% second serves and your opponent is seeing it more often. So
yes.
Imagine the reality is that when you're playing Rafa, you're only seeing his second serve one out of every 4 points that you play. So it's not something you can get comfortable and used to. Now, if you bring that number closer to every other point, you can start to get a rhythm and an understanding of what the serve is actually doing, be slightly more aggressive on it and skew that data and make that number of second serve points one a little bit lower. And then sort of foils the entire plan. On a hard court, you know, I would look at him being a little bit more aggressive with the first serve. At the same time, I would look at him being more aggressive even on the second serve.
Yes.
Because there's actually value to you being more aggressive on that side. On the dirt, there is that old school mentality, which I agree with. It's the percentage play in that keep more first serves, and if you have the first serve, and you can dictate what the return is going to be. And in Rafa's corner, if he can serve to a place where you're going to get, or he's going to get a forehand to hit on the second ball, he's going to win that point probably. I mean, there's no stat on that, but he's going to win that point a lot. And a lot meaning, you know, 60 to 65% of the time. And that means he's going to be dominant in terms of tennis on the dirt. So, it's debatable, but a little bit flawed in the logic. It's sort of easy to crunch the numbers, but there are things that would happen as a result of decreasing the first serve percentage.
So in your opinion, if you're in Rafa's corner right now, on clay, entering Roland Garros, you're going to be happy with similar numbers from him?
Definitely. 100%. There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
Because especially in a best of five, Nima, that's where he's going to really reap the benefits of those statistics. And over time, the higher first serve percentage for him in his particular game, his particular style, will pay off dividends in a longer format.
That's an amazing counter analysis to what Anikon was saying. So really, thank you for that one. So Parsa, as we look to some other stories, we have, you know, number one ranked Andy Murray, who's playing not even realistically as like a top 10 player these days. He lost again very early. Fognini just, I mean, wiped the floor with him in his opening match in Rome this week. He was the defending champion here. So that was a tremendous effort from the Italian, who subsequently lost his next match in Rome. What's Murray's mindset right now? I mean, you know, I have a little bit of a theory here, Parse. I mean, these guys want to play well every week, and that's what really makes you number one. But Murray knows that, you know, Djokovic is right there with him, and they have very similar point defenses coming up. You know what I mean? Either winning this, you know, winning Rome or four Rome finalist, or, you know, winning Madrid or Madrid finalist, or winning Roland Garros and Roland Garros winner, finalist, whatever. So when you look at this, like, then I think second half of the year is where it really gets blown open, because Murray's got a ton of points to defend that Djokovic didn't have. He's got Wimbledon, which he won, and Djokovic lost early, and then throughout the summer season where they both played pretty well, but not as well as they would have wanted to. So when you look at this right now, you know, is Murray's mindset to, because he really has no form entering, you know, Roland Garros, even though he's going to be number one. I could definitely still see him in the second week, but you never know. I mean, he's fit, so he's going to be able to grind through some of these matches. But let's not forget that even last year, his first two rounds against two lesser-ranked players went five sets, right? So he was by no means coasting early on, and he had form going in. So now he really has no form. So, you know, who knows what's really going to happen. But is Murray kind of like, I'm going to show up at Roland Garros, see what I can do there, and then really focus on defending my grass court title? Or you could, you know, there obviously is arguable that you could say absolutely not. And he's never won Roland Garros. He's won a couple Wimbledons. He would much rather want to win the French Open because it's a tournament that he doesn't have. And then he moves forward from there and see what he can do for the rest of the season. So what do you think Murray's mindset's going to be? Because as we know, he has really, you know, no form at this current point.
Yeah, mindset's going to be, can't wait to get on the grass and see if I can get some home cooking and see if I can get myself going in the right direction again.
Yeah.
You know, he's just definitely not where he needs to be. He definitely is not going to have the confidence he needs to have. But he's still a Grand Slam champion and the number one player in the world. And so if he can get going, who knows? But right now he doesn't look so good. He's very passive in the way he plays. You know, also in good news terms, he'll have Lendl in his corner. So that always helps him. So maybe he'll get a little bit of clarity and a clear conscience on what he needs to do, match in and match out, and get the right plans to be set forth and to be put in motion so that he can be successful. I don't know, Nima. It's going to be a tough one for him.
It's going to be very tough and very interesting because I think it's going to be, you know, as we will get into now, Parsa, our top five picks heading into Roland Garros. For everybody out there, Parsa and I will be back later this week to preview the French Open as soon as both the women's and men's singles draws are released. So watch out for that podcast coming up. Before we get into our top five, one player that we will unfortunately not be able to pick is Roger Federer. And Federer announced a few days ago that he will not take part in the French Open. He decided that it's best for him overall not to just play one clay court event this year, so he's foregoing it completely. He said, we'll be, see you guys next year, which I wouldn't really take that seriously. He might be completely done with clay for the rest of his career. He's going to be 36, you know, later this year, and come around next year for the French Open in a few months, he'll be 37. I don't think that clay is something that he really needs in his life at this point. He's going to gear up for the grass court season. He was at a wedding yesterday. He's doing at the Met Gala. He's been all over the place doing a lot of cool things. He's been playing tennis. I know he was in Dubai as well, you know, training there. I had sent you that video because you wanted to know what he was up to. So Stuttgart, Halle, and Wimbledon are his next three events. So let's see how he does on that surface. And is there any way, Parsa, that this much of a gap from winning Miami to then jumping into Stuttgart on grass? Because that's like almost 10 weeks of no competitive, you know, main tour action. Is that too much time for him to completely just, you know what, no, not even skipping a heartbeat and boom, winning Miami, let's go and win Stuttgart, no problem this week? Is that easy of a transition, or is it going to be tough, even as great as Federer is and as great as he has been on grass throughout his career?
I look at it like, you know, at my age now, I used to take, let's say when I was 18, I would take 3 days off and, oh my God, the world would be over. I couldn't hit the ball, blah, blah, blah. Now I can be out for months and I can, within 20 minutes, I've got my game right back into form.
Yeah, I hear you, yeah.
What I don't have is my confidence.
Yes.
But I'm not Roger Federer.
Yes.
And that's the major difference. He now knows exactly what he has to do. He now knows that guys have to respond to his game.
Okay.
And I think it's going to translate great to the grass. And I think he's going to be very sharp and very confident and very understanding of what needs to happen. And I think this can be very, very clear in his purpose going out to the warm-up events. I think even if he loses early in one of them or doesn't win both or wins both or wins one, I think either way, he's just prepping for Wimbledon solely, and that's it. And so with that sort of mindset on improvement and trying to do better and trying to see if he can make some noise in the later stages of the event, I think Federer is on it. And I think that mindset is just perfect for him, especially at this stage of his career. It's actually perfect for everybody. It's just that it's hard to do that week in and week out as you're seeing Djokovic struggling with it and Murray at the same time. Even Wawrinka struggles to sort of be in that mindset. I saw someone on Twitter put something about Wawrinka actually saying, you know, Nima, he always struggles right before slams and then finds his way. Well, that's what he's doing, right? He's just focused on improving, trying to get out of the first round, going on hitting the practice courts in between, getting a little bit better, trying to get through the second round, and so on and so forth. And I think for the top players, it's a little bit more difficult because you've got guys week in and week out attacking you all the time. But for Federer in this stage of his career, he's exactly in that mindset. He's just trying to improve each time he gets out there and try to get a little bit better and try to be there when it counts, which he's done, obviously, a terrific job this year.
Mm-hmm. And so for you right now, you're foreseeing, you know, a very good grass court season for Federer in the coming weeks.
That is looking great for the rest of the year, put it that way.
I think so, too. I think he's just playing it smart. He's just letting everybody else grind out there and get, you know, weak. And then he's just going to be ready to go. Because you know Nadal is going to be tired after Roland Garros. Djokovic, I think, will be okay. He'll be the same as he is today. Murray is going to be feeling okay. Team is not going to be a factor. Zverev is going to be okay. So it's going to be... And then Stan, you know, his best surface, his worst surface, pardon me, is grass. So I think that, you know, Federer... Even right now, even if he didn't play any warm-ups, he's going to be top 2-3 favorite to win Wimbledon at this stage. So it's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds. So Parsa, going with our top 5 picks, why don't you, you know, take it away, and then I'll give everybody what I think are my top 5 Roland Garros picks heading into the event.
All right, guys. I'm only going to give you a top 5 just because I think there's one name that should be all 5, and that's Rafa. I don't care what the result was here in Rome.
Yes.
I think in a best-of-5 scenario, unless Robin Soderling comes out of retirement, there's just really no one in the draw that can beat him. Maybe Wawrinka on a damp day can just absolutely pummel the ball for I don't know. I don't even see that happening. So I've got Nadal on the top of my list, and for argument's sake, I'll give you my 2. I've got Dominic Thiem. I think he is the second best clay court in the world at this very moment.
Yes.
I think number 3 is still Djokovic. He's the defending champion. He's got Andre Agassi in his corner. He's going to have this new rise of belief. I think it's very important. Number 4, I've got Stanislas Wawrinka. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is because he's Stan Wawrinka. And so he's now earned my respect, obviously. He's a great player, tremendous competitor, and in the Grand Slams, he generally shows up. He's at least trying to do the right things, and you know that, and you know he's got the talent and the skill level to win the whole thing. So I got Wawrinka at 4, and surprise, surprise, I got the 20-year-old there, Alex Zverev, as my 5. And the reason is because any day now, it could be this slam, the next one, or 5 more, 10 more from now, he's going to win one. So you're going to hear me have him on my top 5 list almost every time because he's coming, and you can see it coming. And so I've got Zverev as my 5.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Zverev, you know, he's number 1 for the next gen finals that's going to be debuting in Italy, which had some fantastic, they have some really cool rule changes, Parsa, that I'm sure you saw, you know, like with the shot clock and sets only going to 4, best of 5 sets, no ad scoring, no warm-up, on-court coaching. Fans can walk on the sides, not behind the baseline, but on the sides. So really giving him more of that hockey, baseball type of, you know, basketball type of environment. So I think it's going to be super cool to see how that tournament unfolds. But
a bit of a gimmick for me, though, Nima.
Yes. A little. Yeah, it is. But they're experimenting, right? And they can do that. So you gotta. It's trial and error. You know, you got to take what works, and then you can implement. I love the shot clock. I think definitely they should put that because fans, that's just another thing that fans can look at when they're on court. Just like Miami had that awesome, you know, radar gun. Massive, and you could see it. I couldn't, where was it at Rome this week? Did it even have a radar gun? I didn't even know what was going on. Same with Madrid last week. It's like a little tiny thing in the corner. You can't even see it on TV. But with that said, Zverev at this stage, Parsa, forget about the next-gen final. He's going to be at the London finale, the way he's playing right now. Because he said himself, you know, clay's my worst surface. So, I mean, this guy still has all of the hard court season and the grass, you know, to gain even more points. And, It's just watch out for him. But with that, anyways, Parsa, so my top five is I'm going Rafa number one, 19-1, won this tournament 9 times. No questions for me. He's a top favorite. I'm going with Djokovic actually as number two, just because he found some form this week. If he had lost earlier, he wouldn't have been there, but lost some form. He's got Agassi in his corner. He's changing to Lacoste as well tomorrow from Uniqlo, that he's been with them for 5 years. So a lot of changes. He's going to be looking to impress. He's going to be on his best behavior, and he's going to be very professional. And he's already Novak Djokovic. And he made the finals with this week with no coach. So I think that, you know, watch out for Nole. Team's going to be my number three. The only reason he's not number two is because he's never won a slam, so he hasn't proven that yet. But with that said, he's had a tremendous clay court season. He's beat a lot of good players. He's beat Rafa. He's beat Murray. You know, he showed that he can beat the best. I'm going with Murray with my number four. Reason for that is he's still number one in the world. And if, you know, the draws, we never know what's going to happen, right? Like, you always have these draws of death, this and that, but then guys lose, and then he could have a cakewalk draw. He's also number one, so he's going to get the best draw in the, you know, in the draw. So that's also something to look at. So he's going to be my number four pick. And then my number five, I'm actually not going with Wawrinka. I'm going with Zverev. Again, unproven in the slam format, but he's feeling good. Let's also remember, Parsa, that he went deep in Madrid. He won today over Djokovic, and he won the BMW Open. This guy's had an amazing clay court season. You know, he's got to have the third best clay court season after Nadal and Thiem. I mean, there's no question about it. You could even argue that it's been an even better clay court season than Thiem because he won a Masters 1000. So you have to put him, for me, in your top five to win Roland Garros for his maiden title. But again, I'm not very optimistic about it. That's why he's in my final spot there. So that's what I have. So Parsa, with that said, let's move over now to the women's field. We had Svitolina, who I had picked to go deep in Rome. Happy to see her win today. Amazing footwork, friendly player in the mold of Azarenka, as I had mentioned last week. She took out Halep, who, I mean, look, if she had won today on the heels of winning last week in Madrid, you would have to say that she's the overwhelming favorite to win at Roland Garros. But she didn't win today. She lost in three, even after winning the first set and tight second set at 7-5, with then Svitolina pulling away 6-1 in the third. Pretty tough match, 2 hours and 8 minutes of action there. So, you know, stats, Parsa, just quickly to run them down. Svitolina had won 66% of her first serve points, very low percentage on the second serves at 32%, four aces for her, and she broke 7 times to 5 for Halep. So now, looking at this in the unpredictable world of the WTA, you know, we'll talk about how Sharapova didn't get a wild card into either the qualifying or main draw for Roland Garros next week, but staying with this match currently, you know, how did you see, you know, Svitolina? She's also won 4 tournaments this year. You know, she's, I think, going to be up to number 6 in the world tomorrow. So she's coming up quick. You know, very fit player, really enjoys the game. You can see the passion that she plays with on a day-in and day-out basis. Very similar to Halep, but a bigger player, hits a bigger ball too. Can we put her right at the top of the list now as a Roland Garros favorite, in your opinion?
I can't put her at the top, but I think she deserves to be in the top five. How about that?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so. And it's just a constant progression. I mean, if you're her coach right now, you got to look at this and say, listen, you know what? We've had an amazing year. Singles record right now, Parsa, we're at 31 wins to only 6 losses, right? You've won, like I said, 4 tournaments on the season. You know, her 8th title overall, you know, banked over, you know, 6 million now at this stage, only 22 years old. I mean, awesome stuff, really. And, you know, she ties her head-to-head with Simona Halep at 1-1. So the young Ukrainian, you know, at 5'9 compared to 5'6 for Halep. So she's got some decent size for her. Both weigh 132 pounds, both right-handed. I think that, you know, Svitolina, if she doesn't win the French, really like her later this year. We got to remember, Parsa, that, you know, Serena Williams is not coming back until Australia of next year. And that's what she said. You know, a lot of things can happen between today and January of 2018, right? Serena might say, listen, I'll see you guys at Wimbledon. And then you got a couple more slams where anything can really happen, right? So, I mean, why not Svitolina? Who else is there really? You know, Wozniacki hasn't really proven that she can do anything on hard courts, even though she's coming back this year. Muguruza has been injured. Radwanska has been injured. Halep is obviously there. You know, Venus is playing amazing, but she's still 36, 37 years old. So can she win a slam at this point? Going to be tough. Why not somebody like Svitolina? For me, I've been on that bandwagon for a while, as you know, and I'm not getting off of it. So I'm going with her to do some serious damage for the rest of 2017. But anything else that you saw in this tournament on the women's side that's, you know, something to look forward to as we move, as we transition now into Roland Garros?
I think there's some form coming out in that when there is no Serena in the draw, there's really no consistency. And so,
yes,
you know, as much as I picked my pick to win, who knows how it's going to work out, because it's sort of, I almost want to say it's got to be someone who hasn't won yet this year, or at least hasn't won a major event this year, whether it's Indian Wells, Miami, Rome, Madrid, or the Slams, or I guess it's just Australian. It sort of has to be one of those right now, because that's the form that it's going in. Is, you know, if you win this one, well, then you can't win another major one. So
yes,
I think it'll be interesting. I'm interested to hear your top five, Nima.
Here we go, my friend. Top five right now for my pre-turn, well, not pre, but before we even see the draw, these are my top five picks. Number one, Simona Halep. Been the most consistent during this clay season, especially at the biggest events. You know, I really like her demeanor. You know, her game is very solid, and she has Darren Cahill in her corner. To me, is one of the best coaches and tennis minds in the world. One of them. Number two, I have Svitolina after her victory today, especially after her fitness, and she's had a tremendous year, won a lot of matches. And the WTA is, in certain ways, even though it's very unpredictable, because it's always a best of three of two of three format in terms of sets won, is not any transition for the women, right? Because, you know, you win a best of three match today in Rome, you're going to potentially have to do the same thing at Roland Garros. So, you know, from that point of view, there's not any extra fitness that's required to win a Grand Slam over one of these events, apart from, you know, winning one extra match. Because let's not forget, if you're an unseeded player, you're going to have to win six rounds to win, you know, either on the men's or women's side, one of these big Premier Masters 1000s, and in a Slam, you're going to have to win seven. And again, both best two out of three. So that's, for me, Svitolina number two. Muguruza, defending champion, even though she hasn't been on form, you still have to put her, you know, from a defending champion point of view, and she still made the semis this week, so she's been playing well. Injury concerns for me are still, you know, ever apparent, and for that reason, she's not higher ranked in my list, but I still think she could do some damage. Kuznetsova coming in at number four, underrated. You know, nobody's going to be talking about her, but, you know, former winner in Paris, and she's just enjoying this, you know, period of her career, and she loves being under the radar, and she's just going to keep racking up those wins, and, you know, watch out for her, because I would not be surprised in the very least if she wins this tournament in a few weeks' time. And then obviously Kiki Mikhailovic, who, you know, has had an amazing clay court season as well, you know, performed really well consistently throughout the weeks, making finals, semis, and all that jazz, playing amazing in doubles. So she's got a very nice all-court game, very tall player, has the reach. One major concern for me, Parsa, is the French players usually don't perform that well in France. A lot of pressure, you know, the media spotlight doesn't shine, you know, brighter anywhere else for them. Adidas is also one of her sponsors and the tournament sponsor. So there's going to be so much, you know, so many things that she's going to have to do leading up to the event as well as during the event. So can she deal with the pressure? If she can, you know, a deep run is in store for her. If not, then, you know, she could very well lose in the first or second round. So that's my top five. And what do you have?
Number one, I guess, actually, to make it a little climactic, I'm going to start with number five.
Okay.
I'm going to go with number five and say, because she's number one in the world and because she deserves to be on the top five list for any slam, but I'm not very motivated with her play lately to say that she's my favorite. It's going to be Angie Kerber. I think still a worthy champion and can and put it together, and maybe she'll put it together before this tournament. Who knows? Number four, I've got Kuznetsova. I think she's won here before. She's a tough competitor. If the draw works out to her favor and she gets the gritty, grindy type players in the quarters or the semis, and that's who's left in the draw, she's going to win the whole thing. So look out for her. I think at number three, I have to put Svitolina in there. I think she deserves the right to be in the top three type scenario.
Mm-hmm.
She's played the right tennis at the right time. Although, as I was saying before, that doesn't necessarily bode well for the WTA this year, but trends are made to be broken, and so maybe she's going to be the one that breaks it.
Okay.
Number two, I've got Halep. Halep is playing very percentage tennis, very mindful tennis, and has been playing this way now for a while, and you can see her experience is growing and growing, and perhaps it's the beginning of something, perhaps it's just a blip. I do think it could be the beginning of something. I sort of have been on her bandwagon this year. She hasn't come through for me. But maybe this is the one. We'll see. And number one, I've got Muguruza. And the reason I pick her is because she's the most dangerous of the field. Meaning, I don't know if she's healthy enough to win it, but I know that if she is healthy and it is on a clay court, she just knows how to play on the stuff and knows how to hit through the court on this stuff. And so I think that's very important, and I think she plays the surface better than anybody out there, you know, maybe with the exception of Serena. She plays the surface unbelievably well on the WTA Tour, and so I think I have to put her as my number one pick.
I like how you went from, you know, bottom to top. Really, it was a little bit suspenseful. So I was really looking forward to seeing who your number one was. Yeah, that's a great top five as well. You know, unfortunately, Parson, now we're going to have to talk about, you know, what happened with Maria Sharapova. And, you know, a few weeks back when Stuttgart was happening and, you know, she was going to start mid-tournament, I had said that I don't agree that she should be, you know, let in that week. You said that it's not a big deal for you. And then she made the semis and, you know, she had to pull out this week as well, too, in her, I believe, in her second or third match. And they had announced, the French Tennis Federation has announced that they will not be giving her a wild card into qualifying or the main draw, which to me is amazing because you don't have Serena already. And you're going to have the French players. Grand Slams really never struggle for attendance just because they're Grand Slams. But with Serena out, why wouldn't you want to have Sharapova in there? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think, at least give her, because she's very close to getting even, I think, what is she, like 200, like 210 in the world? Something like that right now. You know, and she's very close to already being into the qualifying. Now, I understand that those cutoffs are made weeks in advance. I get that. But based on her current form, it's not like she's just showing up for the French Open, right? She's been playing two or three events, trying to, you know, round up, playing the clay court season, and then not being allowed to play the French. To me, is not very tasteful. I mean, I respect what they're saying as an overall, but you gotta let, I mean, when you have a champion like Sharapova, she's paid her dues. You know, she paid her time. She's coming back and playing. You know that she's not going to drop to 900 in the world. This is a former top, you know, she's won 5 Grand Slam titles, been number one in the world. Let her play the tournament, man. Everything is just going to be much better if she plays. Your viewership, your everything, ticket sales even are going to be even better. So I want to hear what you have to say, because I think that was a major mistake by the French Tennis Federation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a mistake, you know, to be honest with you. She is the 200th best player in the world right now. She's earned that right. And so I think that you have to reward that person. You're supposed to put the best 200, you know, or 210 out there on the field on your courts. It didn't have to be a main draw wild card. It could have been a quality wild card and let her earn her way. That would have been the right thing to do. She had lost the ranking points. And I think she earned that opportunity to be at the ranking she is right now. And I don't think was asking for more than that, or I don't even know if she asked for anything. But to, you know, put it the way he put it, the French Federation president, saying that, you know, he can't justify what she did and all this kind of stuff. Well, she paid her penalty for what she did. And so you don't have to be the police of the tennis world. The judicial system was done already. So now your responsibility as a tournament director is to put the best 210 or 220 or so players in the world on your courts. And that was not the focal point. So I think it was a little bit of just trying to get some brouhaha out there, a little bit of news, a little bit of edginess. But, you know, this is sort of, you know, an overall health problem of the tours, right? It's like each individual tournament gets to make these decisions. The ITF is separate from the WTA, which is separate from the ATP, which is just all these moving entities at the same time and all these opinions that could be strong or not strong. And I think you run into problems in this exact way because we don't have uniformity. Because the truth is, Nima, right? If who's a French woman player, Malendovic or whatever, whatever her name is, however I say it.
Yeah.
If next year she gets caught doping and she goes to zero in the rankings and plays a tournament, you know, two tournaments before the entry deadline closes, and she gets to 210 in the world, but she's not the ranking. It happens the week after the deadline closes or whatever, and she has an opportunity as a French player to get a wild card into the French Open. They're going to give it to her. So that to me is wrong. And there's no consistency or uniformity. And that's when you get all up in arms with hypocrisy and with discrimination and all sorts of things that make you really not feel good about the sport. And so yes. I don't like that part of it. I think common sense should have prevailed, and I don't think it happened in this case.
And on top of everything that you said, Farsa, this has been her best Grand Slam. She's a two-time former winner, right? So she's given that much to this tournament and had so much success. I mean, why wouldn't you want her? You know, like, it's just, it's astounding, really, that they didn't give it to her. And I know there's a lot of people saying this and that. She's got to earn her way back. That's fantastic. But we got to also be realistic here, right? For me, a wild card, you're not giving her the title. You know what I'm saying? Into qualifying? Like, come on, man. Like, you wouldn't want your imagine seeing Maria Sharapova in the qualifying of the French Open. You're telling me that's not going to, you know, give you more people there during that qualifying event? Just to me, it's amazing. Like you said, if you've already been punished and you've been cleared and you are allowed to play, then everything is fair now. Somebody gives you...
And you've earned the ranking, right? Yeah. You just happen to earn it a week later.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. Anyways, let's see what happens. But this could really come back to bite them because if like we know, this could be a very depleted French Open women's field, right? In terms of top quality, because Serena's out. You don't have Sharapova there. Muguruza is hurting. Radwanska is hurting. You know, you have Kerber is playing nowhere near the number one player in the world. You're telling me that, and Sharapova being so comfortable at this event, winning it, you know, in the last couple of years, she could have made a deep run, potentially. She could have saved the women's field. But now you might have a situation where you're going to have, again, it's all respective to whoever's making it because they deserve to be there. But in terms of star power, could be very weak. And to have somebody like Sharapova available, you know, to fill that void and be there with her star presence that is, you know, transcends all of sports because she's in that, you know, that Federer, you know, Serena, Nadal type of category. To me, it's amazing. I mean, I would 100% have let her in if it was my call. So anyways, we'll see how it transpires. But that's why we're going to wait until the end of this week when the draws are released. And we'll be back and seeing how this is all going to break down. So with that said, Parsa, thank you so much for joining us this week and all the great content. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Make sure to also download this podcast on iTunes as well as for your Android phone. Parsa and I, as I mentioned, will be back in a few days to preview the French Open Roland Garros, both the women's and men's fields. For anybody looking to get down to the French Open or Wimbledon or the U.S. Open, make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling. Thank you very much for listening. Keep sending those questions if you want us to answer any of them, and we will chat with you soon.